This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Alrighty, good evening everybody. Welcome to the first Bristol Confringe of 2016. We were going to have two readers tonight, but we've only got one at the moment, so we're going to wing it right now and just dive straight in with some fabulous Doctor Who material. Completely devoid of terror and scrundworms, I'm assured. Please welcome back Nick Walters.
Now this, what I'm going to read, is a chapter from my book Mutually Assured Domination, which is a novel in the new series of Lethbridge Stewart books, try saying that, from Candy Jaw Press. What they've done is they're telling the adventures of the Brigadier before he became the Brigadier. You all know who Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart is, don't you? Anybody not know, get thee to Wikipedia. He's a beloved character, played by a beloved actor, and it was a real privilege to write this book in this series, which is ongoing, and there'll be more books coming out this year and next. There's been a return of the Rutans and the Beast of Fang Rock, and my book, you can probably guess from the title, Mutually Assured Domination, features the return of the Dominators and their robot assistants, the Quarks. You all know who and what those are, I assume. If not, again, Google is your friend. But the Dominators, the story, is a Patrick Troughton story, not one of the greatest of Doctor Who stories, not one of the best loved, a fairly clunky runaround. And the Dominators themselves are these hulking RADA actors with heavy Frankenstein makeup who stomp around a bit and can't destroy a lot. And the Quarks are basically schoolboys in cardboard boxes with shoebox feet and round heads that squeak. They are utterly ridiculous. And my remit was to make them credible and make them balls to that. I just had a laugh, as you're going to see. This is a chapter called Prisoner of the Dominators, where one of the characters gets caught by the Quarks. I am going to need my glasses.
Sorry. I thought the light would be enough.
In the control chamber, Probationer Asbo monitored the delivery of the new consignment with sullen impatience. As he watched the Quarks busily working on the screen, his giant hands curled slowly into fists, and muscles in his enormous arms and legs twitched spasmodically. All this pushing and pulling and unloading and checking and waiting, it was not the true Dominator way. Navigator Decker had drummed into him often enough the concept of the greater glory, but it had failed to stick inside Asbo's cavernous, monomaniacal mind. Asbo longed to destroy. But if he did destroy, he would himself face destruction because he's not following orders. And that would mean he would not be able to destroy because he, Asbo, would not exist. Asbo shook his head, as if to rid himself of such troubling thoughts. Frowning furiously, he concentrated on the Quarks as they unloaded the barrels of waste and tried to stay, what had the navigator said, on mission. 80%. Soon they would have enough to commence conversion and initiate the final stage of Project M. The sooner the better, Asbo thought lugubriously. They could then return to the fleet and continue with their mission of universal domination. His thoughts passed over the event horizon of the black hole of his mind, and Asbo once more gave himself up to fantasies of death and destruction. Slowly he brought his two fists together in front of his massive chest, like two cannonballs kissing, the gloved fingers creaking as they clenched. A movement on the screen caught his dark eye. A human, running about in the waste chamber. Without a second's hesitation, he hit the comm switch and bellowed, "Quarks, destroy, destroy!" He observed with satisfaction as the two Quarks blasted the human to extinction. A warm, soothing feeling thrilled through his body, from his feet, up his legs, through his groin and stomach and black, black heart to just behind his eyeballs. His heartbeat thudded in his chest as he saw two more humans in the chamber, one clearly damaged, the other confronting the two Quarks. Foolish, feeble creature, it would soon be destroyed once the Quarks had recharged. Ah, yes. Asbo grinned as one of the Quarks blasted the ceiling of the cavern above the human, sending rubble crashing down around it. Quarks were playful beings at heart, servile to the dominators, of course, but in the execution of their duty, they often showed admirable cruelty. "What is the meaning of this?" roared a voice from behind the probationer. Asbo whirled round to see Navigator Decker striding towards him. Harold Chorley cringed on the floor of the cavern whilst... Do you know who Harold Chorley is? He's a character from The Web of Fear. He's a slightly wimpy, weedy journalist character with Harold Lloyd glasses. Anyway, I'll carry on. Harold Chorley cringed on the floor of the cavern whilst the two quarks waddled towards him. "This is it," he thought. "The end, blasted to ashes by these devilish robots." Horribly, he could still smell the charred remains of Ian Cordry. Now the same was going to happen to him. Would it hurt? He closed his eyes and waited for his whole life to flash before him. But all he could think was, "My ankle hurts. I don't want to die. They killed my car. Now they're going to kill me." But then, jolting him with surprise, the baritone voice that had ordered the quarks to destroy spoke again. "Quarks, do not destroy. Do not destroy." Relief surged through Chorley. Relief which turned to terror as the voice bellowed, "Bring the human to us." Decker bore down on Asbo. "I have already warned you against wasting Quark energy in this way. Project M must not be jeopardized." "Yes, Navigator Decker." Decker shouldered Asbo aside and hit the comm switch. "Quarks, do not destroy. Do not destroy." He swung back to the glowering probationer. "The more humans we destroy, the more undue attention we will attract. Already, the human military have been visiting our London base." Asbo clenched his massive fist. "But Navigator Decker, that was just one man." His lips curled in a grin of lust. "And we can crush any force this planet could raise against us. Are we not dominators?" "You are not yet a full dominator. Remember that, probationer Asbo," Decker snapped. "Also remember the mission. We are not here to conquer or destroy. We are here to complete Project M. Only when that is complete can we go on to the glory of conquest. So, obey!" Asbo frowned and shook his head as if in confusion. "But, Navigator... these creatures were trespassing." "Negative." A giant finger pointed at the screen. "This creature has probably come to investigate the disappearances of the others, which are as a result of your actions, Probationer Asbo." He hit the comm switch again. "Bring the human to us." "I apologize, Navigator Decker," rumbled Asbo with mountainous insincerity that Decker ignored, but noted. How can you... Oh, well, too late now. "Director Var will be extremely disappointed to learn of this wastefulness. He returns to this base shortly to oversee the final phase of Project M. Phase." Decker stomped around the control chamber, his footsteps thudding like announcements of doom. The probationer's performance was his responsibility, so Asbo's errors would reflect badly on himself. Decker came to a decision and stopped pacing to face his subordinate. "Your performance is extremely disappointing, Probationer Asbo. You are failing to exhibit the appropriate expected behaviours of a dominator. However, I will give you one more chance because you are needed for the successful completion of Project M. Any further waste, any further disobedience, and you face immediate destruction." Asbo's eyes burned with rebellious fire, but he intoned dutifully, "Yes, Navigator Decker." "We will bring the creature in for interrogation." With that, Decker strode from the chamber. But something Asbo had said suddenly struck him. He turned back. "Asbo, you said these creatures, there are more than one?" "Yes, Navigator Decker, the quarks destroyed one. We have captured one other, and yet one more has escaped." "You should have informed me of this. If it manages to get back to its fellows, the attention it could bring would be catastrophic for Project M." "It could be hunted down and destroyed," thundered Asbo. "Let me send a consignment of quarks." "No," bellowed Decker. "But wait." Asbo's response, predictable though it was, contained a valid point. The creature could be hunted down and destroyed before it was able to report to its fellows, but that would waste valuable quark energy when they were so close to 100% completion. An idea struck him. "There is another way, a way shown by Director Var." "Another way?" Asbo rumbled, clearly unable to entertain any other concept than destruction. "Director Var has connections with the human authorities. It would be easy for pressure to be exerted in the right places. Any report this escaped creature might make could be dismissed as the ravings of a lunatic. The time for a confrontation can therefore be delayed, and perhaps never come before the completion of the final phase of Project M. I will contact the director immediately so that he can make the necessary arrangements. Asbo seemed visibly deflated at these words. But navigate to the risk. Surely it would be better to destroy. Is that not the Dominator way? Obey, obey, yelled Decker. I have already warned you. The purpose of a navigator is to obey. Yes, Navigator Decker. So obey me now and prepare the Mentotron. Asbo's green eyes gleamed cruelly. Command accepted. Charlie tried to crawl away as the two quarks shuffled towards him, their cuboid arms extended as if to crush him in a quadrilateral embrace. But the pain in his twisted, broken perhaps, ankle made him grimace with agony, and he could only manage to slither a small distance away. Suddenly the quark on the left retracted its concertina-like legs until its body was resting flush with the dusty ground. From its casing two shining silver prongs emerged, extending at ground level. The quark slid smoothly towards the prone journalist, and Chorley squirmed as he felt the prongs slide under his body. The quark then lifted him up, as if he were a pallet of goods, as if it was a forklift and this was a warehouse, not a nuclear waste storage area. In this undignified manner, Chorley was unceremoniously dumped in one of the now-empty nuclear waste trolleys. One of them pushing their captive in the trolley, the two quarks headed back across the cavern towards a silver door through which they had emerged. Chorley felt a stab of anger. These blighted things had killed Ian, blasting him out of existence, and clearly they had also killed his brother and the missing Ikers too. Where are you taking me? The quarks completely ignored him. He had a pretty fair idea of where he was going, though, right into the centre of the Dominex plant to meet the master of these strange little robots. Alien robots? So, alien masters? He remembered Director Var on Panorama being interviewed by Robin Day. Fellow looked foreign, maybe Slavic, but an alien? Chorley winced as they went over a bump and his ankle banged against the side of the trolley. They were almost at the silver door now. Chorley fought down a rising tide of panic by telling himself that he wasn't just on his way to certain danger, but on his way to a story. Oh yes, if he ever got out of this alive, he'd have one hell of a story. The quarks wheeled him through the door and along a short corridor. From his position on the trolley, he was almost at ground level and had a limited view of his surroundings. He could see the feet of the first quark shuffling ahead of him, and if he craned his neck, he could see the spired, spherical head of the quark pushing the trolley and the ceiling of the corridor. There was another painful bump and they stopped. Then the floor juddered and there was a sense of movement. From what he could gather, they were now in a lift. Chorley tried to compose his thoughts, and he ran over his cover story again. He was Peter Carver, archaeologist in search of Roman remains on Dartmoor, totally innocent. The lift came to a jarring halt, which made Chorley think it wasn't built for transporting things that could feel pain, and he was wheeled along another corridor and around several corners into a small room that had the dimensions of a prison cell. There he was left, trolley and all. The quarks waddled off, burbling and chirruping, apparently pleased with themselves for a job well done. Chorley lay on the trolley staring at the grey metal ceiling with its single circular light panel. After a few minutes, his impatience and curiosity got the better of him and he sat up and slid into a sitting position. He gingerly put his foot on the floor. He winced. The pain was worse than ever. No chance of running away then, or even standing up. With a hiss of hydraulics that startled him, the door slid open and a towering, terrifying figure entered the cell. Fully 7 feet tall, it had limbs like tree trunks encased in black leather. It wore a ridged black shell of shiny blue-black armour, built up around the shoulders, making it look as though it had no neck. Its face was leathery, pale, and totally without mercy, green eyes gleaming with savage cruelty below a low forehead topped with receding black hair that gleamed like tar in the artificial light.
You have been found trespassing on Dominic's property. It rumbled in a voice that seemed to shake the walls of the cell. You will be destroyed. No, you will be prosecuted. But first, you will be questioned.
Before Chorley could process any of this, another figure shoved its way into the cell. This one looked like the older, cleverer brother of the first. The two men stared down at Chorley, still prone in the trolley.
Stand, the new arrival bellowed.
Chorley gazed helplessly up. It felt as if he was lying at the bottom of two statues carved into a cliff face.
I can't, he wailed. My ankle.
It appears to be injured.
Scan. The less hirsute one went to a panel on the wall and removed a device that bizarrely resembled a futuristic hairdryer. Chorley cowered as the nozzle was pointed in his direction.
He closed his eyes, remembering Ian Cordery, expecting obliteration. Instead, he heard a voice rumble, "Slight fracture to the talus bone. Initiate regeneration." The hairdryer device emitted a low hum, and Chorley felt a globe of heat close around his foot and ankle. There was a moment of pain so intense that Chorley couldn't even scream. Then it was over, leaving a pins and needles tingling. "Now, stand." Gingerly, Chorley did as he was ordered. The pain in his ankle had completely disappeared. "Hey, you could market that, make a fortune," he babbled. The pair of giants ignored him, regarding him with baleful, impatient glares. Now he was standing up. They still towered over him. A knot of fear tied itself in his guts, and yet he felt a sense of elation. He was on to something big, as big as the business in the underground, maybe even bigger. "You're aliens, aren't you?" "I am Navigator Dika. This is Probationer Asbo. We are dominators, masters of the 10 galaxies. We have subjugated thousands of races. Bandrils, Tivolians, Gons, Girdles, Monoids, all have quailed before our might." "And you're here to subjugate us?" Probationer Decker leaned down so his face was inches from Chorley's. "Our purpose here is for us to know and you to not know." Touché. Hang on. "If you're aliens, how come you can speak and understand English?" "Silence!" Probationer Decker bellowed so loudly that the walls of the cell seemed to reverberate like a ringing bell. He swung round to face Asbo. "Is the Mentatron prepared?"
"Yes, Navigator Decker."
"Then bring it in."
"Command accepted."
Asbo left briefly to return, wheeling a compact dome device borne on a trolley. From the side of the machine, wires protruded. It looked ominously medical. Chorley backed up against the wall of the cell and found himself slammed back against it as if by an invisible hand. "I can't move." The two dominators ignored him, instead busying themselves with their strange device. Shortly, Asbo approached him, trailing two wires from the machine. These wires ended in sticky pads, and Chorley could do nothing but grimace in dread as the dominator attached them, with curious delicacy, to Chorley's temples. Chorley blinked away tears as he watched Asbo step backwards and stand before him, arms folded, nodding in satisfaction. Decker flicked a switch on the strange machine, and there was a low, droning hum of power. Chorley opened his mouth to scream, but there was no pain, only a slight tingling at the temples where the wires were attached. Decker moved to stand beside and slightly in front of his subordinate. "Name?" Chorley desperately recalled his cover story. "Peter Carver." The machine emitted a harsh buzz and sparks of agony shot through Chorley's head. "You lie!" roared his interrogator. "If you answer falsely, the Mentatron will detect it and you will suffer." "You might have told me that before we started." Sweat trickled into Chorley's eyes, and he couldn't even move to wipe it away. "Now, name?"
"Harold Barrington Chorley."
"What is your function?"
"I'm a journalist."
"Explain! Expand!"
"For alien conquerors, they're a bit dim," Chorley thought.
"I report on events, happenings..."
"For what purpose?"
Chorley felt a disorientating mix of exasperation and fear. "Well, to tell the people of this planet what's really going on." Their blank stares emboldened him, and he was deep in enough now that the truth wouldn't hurt. In fact, quite the opposite. "Take this place, you lot down here with your robots. I came down here to find out what was going on." There was a tingle in his temples. "Okay, I was sent down here to find out what was going on. And if I'd managed to get away, your game would be up, Mush." Asbo stepped towards him, his fist bunking into cannonballs.
"You must be destroyed!"
"Silence!" bellowed Decker. He was staring at Chorley with a thoughtful expression in his deep-set, red-rimmed eyes. "You take information and spread it to the rest of your kind?" "That's about the size of it." Chorley didn't like the way Asbo was staring at him, or the way his massive black-clad fingers were twitching.
"Enough talk," growled Asbo. "Let me destroy this worm."
"Silence!" barked Decker. Again he leaned down so his pale leathery face was inches from Chorley's own. His breath had a sour chemical smell. Chorley tried to cower away, but was unable to move even an inch. The Dominator's green eyes burned with malevolence.
"This function you speak of may be of use to us."
Chorley swallowed. His mouth was dry. Decker's words rattled around his head. Realization dawned. "Are you offering me a job?"
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.